This podcast is intended for investment professionals.
Hello, and welcome to LGIM Talks. Stewardship seems to be at the forefront of investors' mind at the moment. There have been plenty of high-profile news articles about the need for asset owners to demonstrate, not just talk about, how they are being responsible stewards of their clients' capital for the next 10, 20, 30 years. And this focus on outcomes and impact is what's behind the Financial Reporting Council's ambitious revision to the UK Stewardship Code, which comes into effect this year. With new expectations about how investment and stewardship are integrated across asset classes, tougher hurdles to become a signatory, and publicly available reporting, the new code looks like it will really shake things up for investors going forward. Here to talk through what it means in practice and what you can look for in your asset managers in the future is Corporate Governance Manager Jeanette Andrews. Jeanette, welcome back to LGIM Talks.
Hi Mark, it's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Jeanette, what is the Stewardship Code and why did it need a revising from its 2012 reincarnation? What was wrong with it?
Well, quite a lot was wrong with it, but I am personally really excited about the new Stewardship Code, and not just from a geeky corporate governance ESG perspective.
I'm really excited about the Stewardship Code is a very brave claim, which I'm going to ask you to back up here.
It is a brave claim, but it's because I genuinely consider that the new code has the potential to raise the bar in terms of the quality of stewardship provided by the asset management community, and providing better information back into the public domain so that our clients, people listening today, have much better understanding of what we are doing, why we are doing it, and the impact that we are having.
And that's been such a crying need from investors that we've heard from time and time again, that people are saying that there just isn't enough data or enough clarity over what constitutes good stewardship and how can we quantify, how can we compare asset managers and what they're doing.
It's true. Every client asks us when they put in their due diligence review or in a sort of request for proposal document, they always ask, are you a signatory to the UK Stewardship Code? Well, yes, we were a founding signatory to the UK Stewardship Code, but what does that actually mean in practice? And unfortunately, the answer previously was not a lot. It was a broad commitment to undertake a very narrow range of activities across UK equity assets. And it didn't really reflect what our clients expect of us in terms of how we look after their assets and how the asset management industry ought to be looking after the assets of all of their clients, the beneficiaries on the street. So we have had a long wait for this new stewardship code.
It's been a long time coming.
So the original code was released in 2010 as a response to the global financial crisis and the accusations that companies were left ownerless, which allowed some of the big scandals a decade ago to occur. And at the time, it was groundbreaking, but it hadn't been updated for almost 8 years, which, you know, led it to really not reflect what best practice was and has developed into. So the new code jumps ahead of where we think the market currently is and where a lot of our clients' expectations currently are, to really set a standard that is quite aspirational and stretching, but that we will be expected to achieve. Now, a lot of it we're doing already, because we believe that's important. But it's the market-wide impact of this that's important.
That it's not just kind of recognising that our understanding or clients' understandings of stewardship has changed. It's going beyond that and going, well, let's be more aspirational about what it is we as an industry can achieve.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit more about kind of what it is at the heart of the code. What is stewardship as defined by the code now? Has that changed? Is stewardship still the same thing as it was in 2010, 2012?
So no, I mean, in 2010, 2012, the Stewardship Code really focused on voting engagement activities. Under the new code, it's much more about how we manage money on our clients' behalf. in their long-term interests, how we make companies better and the markets that they operate more efficient and sustainable for the long term. So the FRC has got quite a long explanation as to what stewardship is. But in summary, it's about making companies in the market work in the interests of our long-term clients and long-term pension savers.
Making the system just
making
better.
The system better. And that should have long-term benefits, not just for the economy, but also for environment and society. And the FRC explicitly talk about those benefits within their stewardship definitions.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned before, so the 2012 iteration, you could kind of, as an asset owner, say, yes, of course we engage, or of course we vote, or of course we pay lip service enough to this idea of stewardship as it was then. What's changed in becoming a signatory, where they were just had to explain what they were talking about? What's now?
So I'm going to take a step back and just talk about how it's changed and then how that will impact signatories. So we've always said that stewardship should sit at the heart of how you manage money and how you invest, and that's really reflected in the new code. It's meant to sit at the within the culture of the organisation, to be led from the CEO, from the board of directors, and so therefore it should apply to the asset management firm across all of its business. So, firstly, the stewardship code does apply globally to all assets. So our clients invest globally.
Yeah, define that. So we're talking about previously it was only about your UK assets. It was a very UK-focused kind of code. And now we're putting the onus on these asset owners to really look at, well, if you hold US companies, you need to be applying the same levels of stewardship for your US companies. Can you tell us a little bit more? How is global being defined here?
Yeah, so asset owners, they can sign the code themselves. And they also can check that their asset managers are signing the code and applying it. So, yes, as an asset manager, we manage assets globally. Many of our clients have global exposures. So it's about making sure that we're not just favouring, one sub-geography of assets, that we are looking across the investment piece, really understanding where the environmental, social, governance risks may lay, and then directing our stewardship activities accordingly. And you will note I've used the term assets. And again, that's a big difference between the new code and the old code. So the old code only applied to equity. Well, that's great if you are only invested in equity. LGM or not, our clients are invested across the piece. And so under the new code, stewardship explicitly extends to fixed income and real assets. Now, again, from our perspective internally, we've been doing a lot of this in those areas for a long time. But we think it's positive that the official definition is expanded. And it also means that our clients... makes it more relevant. The stewardship code is more relevant for them because it more closely reflects their investments.
Completely. Our clients have these, all investors tend to have these diversified multi-asset portfolios. And I think it's really interesting, as you said, you just brought in fixed income, because perhaps it has been the case, prior to this new wave of kind of stewardship in ESG, that it was there was the misapprehension that there was no ESG in fixed income, that credit could not be, you couldn't apply stewardship to credit. You really were limited to that voting and engagement as a shareholder and not via your real property exposure, not via your credit exposure.
Yeah, which is so far from the truth of how we think about these investments. And so you've got to be thinking about these long-term risks and how that asset is going to be looked after over that time frame. It sounds so obvious, but the fact is it wasn't in the code, and now it is. And that helps clients direct questions. It sets a minimum expectation of what the industry ought to be doing, and that can only be helpful.
So the benefits to investors, to kind of sum that up, seem to be really twofold. The asset managers have to show that they are really walking the walk on stewardship to become a signatory, and the investors can then compare their activities in these publicly available reports. Yeah. Would you say that's kind of the key benefits for listeners, investors everywhere?
Yes, it really raises the bar in terms of stewardship expectations on us by the market broadly and by the best practice set out in the code. And we anticipate that will come through in client questions and queries and how the market develops and innovates over the next few years. But the reporting aspect is really key. So the previous code was comply or explain. So you just had to set out your commitment to say, yes, I do this. Mm-hmm. Or if you don't, explain why, and you can be a signatory.
So you could really say, I can just explain away a large amount of kind of even what was expected under stewardship in 2012 and say, well, I've explained it, so I can still sign.
Exactly. Which is not what our clients expect. When you talk externally about what good stewardship is, that's not what people talk about. And so the new reporting requirements under the 2020 code means that we have to apply all of the principles of the code in order to become a signatory.
So really is they do everything to become a signatory.
Yeah.
Otherwise, even you leave out one, you can't.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Exactly. And most importantly, we then have to report on the outcome and impact of that principle publicly on an annual basis.
And again, a thing that clients have been agitating for to see, well, it's all very well talking about your stewardship activities, but what's actually happening? What's the result of your work?
How do you evidence it in the public domain? So we have quite extensive disclosures on what we do already. There's a lot of information on our websites. But the advantage of the stewardship code is that all this information is going to be released at the same time by asset managers. So to be a signatory, you are committed to reporting your outcomes of your stewardship activity within 3 months of the calendar year end. So for our investors and our clients and the public, they will get timely information of our activities and timely information of all signatories' activities at the same time. So within weeks, everything will be open to the market. And we think that will assist in the market being able to compare activities like for like, to identify what is particularly valuable for clients, what perhaps isn't so valuable, and help drive improvements in our activities and innovation in the market.
It's so useful for as an investor to be able to have that such a clear kind of comparison of just saying, look, I can now look across the whole suite of asset managers who are signatories to the code and say, look, between what will be 2020, throughout the whole of year of 2020, come March 2021, they'll be able to look and compare the each individual actions across every principle of the code.
Exactly. And you know, we hope that will improve market knowledge of what stewardship is. We hope that will enable clients to differentiate to a greater degree the different types of stewardship that are available between different asset managers. And because everything's in the public domain, it's also our clients' beneficiaries that will also be able to access this information.
Absolutely. You can pass that kind of information on to a scheme member, to an advised client, consumer of ISA products, to say, you're invested in this fund and, you know, just look at this report. Hopefully it's a readable report in nice, easy to understand language. But to say, this is the stewardship activities they took on your behalf and here's the outcome and the impact that those activities had.
Yeah. So we've been reporting now for many years on our activities on an annual basis. And over that time, our clients and you, Mark, will have seen big changes in how we report, what case studies we use, what information we provide. And we expect to continue to innovate in this space. And so, you know, feedback on what's worked well, what's useful is really valuable. And we take that on board and then reflect it for next year's reporting. So again, hopefully the fact that everyone's reporting in the same way, that will assist us in providing better and better reporting back to our clients.
It's so important as well that to take you back a step to say that there is that flexibility, and that not every asset manager will do stewardship in the same way, and perhaps they shouldn't do it in the same way. Everyone's got to find the right what they believe is the right way to be a steward and give clients that opportunity to compare and contrast.
Yes. And even internally, we apply stewardship in slightly different ways depending on how we invest. Yeah. So the new code, the new 2020 code, has got specific principles on integration, which we think is fabulous because we do believe that integrating ESG into the investment process is critical for long-term returns, particularly on an active side. But how we do that across different portfolios, you know, does differ somewhat. There's been a lot of innovation in that space in the last 3 years. You've seen Elgin release our scoring processes, for example, our communication around ESG integration has improved quite significantly from an external perspective, with sort of examples on our websites and in our active ownership report. And we will just see that increasing going forward.
So I'd like to take you back. You mentioned one of the new principles, integration, here. And so the code brings in 12 principles. Now, am I right in thinking that's quite a lot more than the previous one from 2012?
Yes.
So what else is new? And can you perhaps let's not go through all 12. We'll be here forever. But let's go through some of the most important ones that are perhaps new and have been enhanced from the 2012 iteration.
Well, of course, I think all 12 are equally important. But a few that are really standout. So integration is one, very explicitly in terms of the expectation that you integrate and report on how integration differs between the different asset classes and approaches to investment. Secondly, a really important new principle is the expectation that we should also consider big market-wide systemic risks when we undertake stewardship.
What would those look like?
So, for example, climate change.
Okay.
So at Elgin, we've been looking at climate change as a big market-wide risk for many, many years and have got a quite detailed, structured engagement program around that through our Climate Impact Pledge and other activities. But the expectation is now, if you are an investor who signed up to this code, you ought to be thinking about some of these market-wide aspects.
Yep.
Now, of course, I mean, our clients are also interested in some of these very long-term market-wide issues that are going to impact the value of their investments. So, of course, we as stewards of their assets also ought to be thinking about it. It sounds obvious. It wasn't in there before. Mm-hmm. And that's why at the beginning I talked about making companies better, but also the markets better as well.
So really, I think that comes through so much as that step forward again from the voting and engagement being very specifically targeted on individual companies, and that engagement and stewardship should really be a asset manager to company kind of equation, when actually this now expands and say, look, there are these systemic risks, systemic issues, and the market health has to be considered, certainly since clients' portfolios are so very diversified now.
Exactly. And there are also some new principles that will have a direct impact on our clients. So principle 6, for example, talks about considering client needs. So, you know, we frequently run surveys of our clients. We have a ESG stakeholder group every year where we invite clients into our office to test us on our policies and approaches.
Which issues are most important?
Yeah, to help us frame our strategies in future years. We've always believed that that communication is important and it links the different components of the investment chain. But now it's in the code. So it's recognised that across the market, across all asset managers, across asset owners, if everybody did this, then there would be additional benefits.
Completely. It's that everyone is actually considering what it is that clients really need out of their stewardship requirements.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'd like to kind of perhaps focus on more on the FRC perhaps than the code with my next question, in that one of the criticisms that have come up in recent reviews and kind of quite high profile reviews was that the FRC had very good intentions, but perhaps not quite the enforcement capabilities to make sure that, and I'm looking again at the requirements to become a signatory to the 2012 code, perhaps to the 2020 code, is an example of this, of how can you stop greenwashing? Because so many investors are really concerned about greenwashing and the companies talking the talk but not walking the walk.
Absolutely. And walking the walk, let's declare the conflict.
Yep.
In that our chairman, John Kingman, led the review into the workings of the EFRC and identified many of these issues in his Kingman report. That's absolutely the case. The EFRC have got a really important role to play in how the 2020 Stewardship Code will be applied.
Yeah.
So the FRC decides who is going to be a signatory and who isn't. So you will be a signatory if you can demonstrate you have applied all 12 principles and reported on the outcomes and activities around those 12 principles on an annual basis. So the natural question is, well, how will they do that? Do they have the resources to do that? How can they enforce this on an ongoing basis? These are very valid questions. We are working with the FRC to make sure that they do have the resources and expertise to be able to make that decision. But I do think it's important that an independent group are making that decision.
Yeah.
It's the initial hurdle. And the information will be public in any case for our clients and others, interested stakeholders,
can compare and say,
to take the view.
I'm not sure actually this report is quite demonstrating a sufficient application of the principles.
But I think somebody setting a minimum standard and applying it is a good one, because otherwise you get to the case where we were before, where you could sign up to the code, be a code signatory, but explain away a lot of the rationale as to why, in terms of how you applied the principles or didn't apply the principles.
Here at Legal & General, we do a lot of activities regarding stewardship. We have our annual active ownership report. We have our climate impact pledge, as you mentioned. What is it about the new code that will change what you and the corporate governance team do here?
So the nice thing is, not a huge amount. We think the code is moving to where we currently operate. It's reflecting where best practice currently sits in a very aspirational way.
Mm-hmm.
So our activities will continue. We've got our long-term plans around engagement, and that will continue to undertake those. Don't forget, we have already been innovating in this space. We have our public ESG scores that are on our website we spoke about.
And these score every company according to the ESG measures that you've identified.
Yeah, exactly. I expect that innovation to continue in the team. In terms of our reporting, again, our reporting has changed significantly in recent years. We are trying to bring much more relevant case studies to our clients to evidence what we are doing in new ways. We're not planning an overhaul.
Interesting.
So you will see some incremental changes and new ways of disclosing our information, some more detailed case studies perhaps, but it won't be transformational.
An incremental but not a radical shift.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
So my last question before I let you go and we close up on Stewardship 2020, what do you feel like is going to be the biggest shift as a result of these changes to the code?
Well, I really hope it's that clients already recognise that stewardship is important. But I hope that when they now ask the question, are you a signatory to the Stewardship Code, that they recognise the impact that saying yes can actually have on the market and what goes on behind that statement, that when we say yes, we are a signatory. And I just have to caveat that we are not yet a signatory to the 2020 Stewardship Code. Mm-hmm. The FRC are not taking signatories until next summer.
Yeah.
So we're going to be applying the 2020 Stewardship Code this year, and then the FRC will define their signatory list next summer. So I think that's important, but a technical definition, but important for clients to realise. So I, So I think that's going to be the biggest impact, that stewardship expectations will increase, that clients will put us under more pressure, more questions, which we welcome on our stewardship activities to encourage that innovation. and that others in the marketplace are also going to have to implement this.
Mm.
So globally across all assets, that should have a really positive impact on the market as a whole. We'll wait and see.
Absolutely. It really does mean that to be a signatory of the code will carry more weight with that kind of additional meaning, and the impact of the work that goes into becoming a signatory becoming more apparent. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. What should investors really take away? And then I'll let you go.
Okay, so two big takeaways. First of all, we genuinely consider that the new stewardship code will raise the bar in terms of the quality of stewardship across the market as a whole. And that, to me, is really exciting because we can't do it on our own. We need the whole market to be undertaking quality stewardship if it's going to make a material difference to our clients' investments. And secondly, by providing better information back into the public domain on the activities that we're undertaking, and the activities that all signatories are undertaking, we're hoping that will provide better information, be able to allow clients to better differentiate between the types of stewardship and provide the market more information.
Which is exactly what they're crying out for.
Exactly.
Well, thank you again for joining us today, Jeanette.
Thank you, Mark.
And if you'd like to hear more from Jeanette, we recorded a great episode last year on ESG versus ethical investing and why they're a lot more different than you might think. Search for it in your podcast player, and we'll see you again next Wednesday for more Elgem Talks. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal and General Investment Management. Legal and General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal and General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.